I don't think you can count on that. I just don't. A juicy quote tells a story. Jason Light was telling you the truth, and you know I'm right. A ham and cheese muffalata. It's not a consistent message.
Buccaneers fans, we are fired up. It's the Ira Kaufman podcast. It's June. And you know what, Ira? This is when we go into overdrive. Yeah, that's just the bottom line. We never stop. The traffic is less on the street, and we're flooring it here on the Ira Kaufman podcast, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the baron of Big Storm beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, the king of Newport Richie, the custodian of Canton, Uncle Ira. Ira Kaufman, presented by Bill Curry Ford and the greatness of Bill Curry Ford. 61 years in Tampa. 61 years right there, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. And GM Sean Sullivan is ready at all times to help Bucks fans like he's your favorite cousin in the business. He's going to take care of you. He'll give you the Ira Kaufman discount. You can always count on their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. Great inventory, great service, the body shop. They are unbelievable. The Curry family is taking care of the community at all times. BillCurryFord.com. Start shopping right there. It should all start there. Truck, used vehicle, cherry red Ford Escape like Ira. BillCurryFord.com. Ira, we got so much Buck stuff on the docket today. How are you?
I'm doing well, my man. Now, Steve, I was a toddler. I was a toddler when Bill Curry Ford started selling cars at that location. I was a toddler. But this week's theme is curb appeal. And by curb appeal, I don't mean my washboard stomach over there, DeKemper. What I'm talking about is I got the sprinkler guys coming in the morning, and they're putting in all new sprinklers. I got a 30-year-old system. It's leaking here. It's leaking there. Half of the water is going on out into the street. And then next week, the sod people are coming. The sod people, Lee. This is about the fifth time we're trying for grass. Let's see if it works. I know you're very familiar with grass and the benefits of it, DeKemper, but this is sod, St. Augustine sod.
That's what I have at my house. When I bought my house, I re-sodded it. It cost me about $4,000. And no, I don't smoke weed. I have asthma, so I can't do that, but if that's what you're insinuating.
And Steve, you know, after the sod goes down, Steve, then you got to get the company comes out, sprays, chemical, and once a month. Peeing on the sod ain't going to work, Steve. That don't do it. I got to go after the chinch bugs and the this and the that. And, you know, I'm laying out some serious shekels over here.
I don't even know what to say. I don't know. A bag of grass seed and a little bit of fertilizer, $35. You're all good, Ira. What's going on over there? You should have called me.
We don't cut corners over here, Isbits. This is the full treatment.
I can only imagine my wife's face if I said we're buying $4,000 worth of grass. All right. Sage.
She'd say, is it the good stuff from Columbia? That's what she'd say.
So curb appeal, Ira, I don't know. I don't know why that's the theme, but you should have warned us in advance. But who cares? We can throw the theme out the window. Sage, we're jacked up here. And as long as you're talking about your house and the value of the house, Florida's Elite Restoration, that's the name. Florida's Elite Restoration that everyone needs to keep in the back of their head if they have a problem in their home. Mold, leaks, fire, wind damage from a storm this year. That's your first phone call 24/7. They will respond. They will give you an absolutely free assessment of what's happening in your house so you can proceed smartly and intelligently and not get screwed by your insurance company, because it happens all the time across Florida, especially this time of year. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Your buddy Josh Irie, you know that he's ready to help people, and he's been helping fans of Joe Bucks fan for months now, almost over a year.
You know, and Steve, I mentioned it last week. I think it's worth repeating in terms of Florida's Elite Restoration. Everybody is, you know, putting their house up and seeing how many bids they can get on. It's a hot market. I mean, as hot as we've ever seen it. And if you're thinking about even selling your house, you're going to have to get an inspection. And one of the things they look for, one of the first things, is water damage. And that could be a problem in an impediment in selling your house. If you think you might have a problem, call Florida's Elite Restoration.
All right, Ira, we got some irony. We're going to crack open the Big Storm beer right now, the official beer of the podcast. And I got to throw this one past you, Ira, because it's just so ironic. And there was so much irony and only the Bucks kind of things that happened in the lost decade. So this wasn't lost on me, even though we're out of those doldrum days, that horrible decade that aged us all 20 years, you 30 years, Ira. Scotty Miller, he did an interview with Aqib Talib, and he's sitting there and he tells Aqib Talib that the guy he aspires to be like, the film that he watches and studies and the player he believes he can be in the NFL, is DeSean Jackson. Now, Ira, when they traded DeSean Jackson, they got back a sixth-round pick. They drafted Scotty Miller with that pick, and Jackson was the guy that was tearing the team down in a lot of ways. And meanwhile, the perfect fit, allegedly, I guess, for Scotty Miller and for this offense is to have Scotty Miller playing like DeSean Jackson. It's too rich, Ira, too rich.
Excuse me for a second, Lee. I got to get a paper towel. I think I just threw up on the corner of the carpet over here. Of all the people, Lee, I thought he was going to mention Wes Welker or somebody. I mean, Julian Edelman, somebody. He comes up with DeSean Jackson. Now, Lee, I'll say this, and you know I'm right. You know, for 5 or 6 years, DeSean Jackson was one of the great legitimate deep threats in this league. There's no question about it. He's averaging 17, 18 yards a catch. That's a big, big number. People don't do that very often around here now. You know, that's Paul Warfield numbers, Lance Allworth numbers, big, big numbers. But we've had DeSean Jackson around here, and Scotty Miller, God forbid, should have done his homework and realized that DeSean Jackson was a disaster as a free agent. You've got about 9 stories which you haven't told us, and I don't blame you because the time isn't right. But there will be a time, Lee, when you tell your DeSean Jackson stories about what a lousy teammate he was. So if he's just talking about DeSean Jackson catching long passes, that's one thing. But if you're talking about the diva, the attitude, the locker room presence, I think Scotty Miller could have picked a lot better.
Yeah, I'm confident Miller wasn't talking about the cancer that DeSean Jackson is. I'm sure he was talking about his football ability, get past the defense. I bet you Scotty Miller probably doesn't even know anything about DeSean Jackson getting in a physical hassle with the coach or the other stunts. Steve and I just had a Twitter over the weekend, a gentleman from Great Britain, I believe. And he was asking, when are you going to spill the beans on DeSean Jackson? I said, as soon as every person who is in the same position
right.
he currently is in and was in when this went down, when that person or people leave, then I'll spill the beans. You know, I'm a man of my word. When people say off the record, that's sanctimony. Well, I'm saying this about DeSean Jackson, just so people know, DeSean Jackson, the few times I dealt with it, was cool to me. So, but I got to be honest with people. And I hear stories from legitimate stories. You know, I can't say, well, he was nice to me, so I'll look the other way. No.
Lee, I gotta preserve hope for the fans who are dying to know the truth about DeSean Jackson, because I got to disagree with you, Lee. I think that if you see the man in the flesh who gave you all this DeSean Jackson information, the real home run blast, if you see him at $1 this summer, you could always ask him, hey, you mind if I reveal that? And he might say, yeah.
I guess I could. I did see him out at $1 a year or two ago. And I said, hey, man, and I mentioned his games. Like, hey, Lee, how's it going? I said, you didn't see anywhere the DeSean Jackson news you told me about. You haven't seen that anywhere, have you? And he kind of smiled with me, because, no, I haven't. I said, you won't either.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that he comes to $1 this year and you say, hey, you know, it's been a few years. Could I put that out there without your name on it? And he might say yes, so the fans might have this. I'm gonna throw some hope out there, Lee. They might have this in late August, and it would be a lot of fun to discuss on this podcast. So I'm restoring hope, Ira.
Steve, Lee's right. I mean, Scotty Miller doesn't know much about DeSean Jackson in the locker room. And so he was talking about the style of play. And the problem for Scotty Miller, if it is a problem, Steve, because Scotty Miller made some big plays for the Bucks. Just ask the Green Bay Packers about that playoff game in Lambeau. Steve, you know DeSean Jackson in Philly. I mean, he would catch about 60 balls, for about 1,100 yards and, scoring 9 touchdowns. Now, barring an injury to the big two, Mike Evans and Godwin, Scotty Miller's not going to put up those numbers. That's not a knock on Scotty Miller, although I don't think you can put him in the class of vintage DeSean Jackson right now. I don't think that's fair. But he makes his mark, and defenses have to be aware of him. And he's got the speed that Godwin and Mike Evans, the flat-out line speed that those two guys and Tyler Johnson don't necessarily have. And I'm not sure Antonio Brown has that at this point in his career. So he serves a function, but he's not going to get the 60, the 1,100 yards and that kind of production as long as what I think is the best wide receiver tandem in football is still on the Buck roster.
You're absolutely right, Aaron.
Do you think, thanks to Scotty Miller, Mike Pettine is now with the Bears and no longer the defensive coordinator of the Packers?
I think that's a big, big reason. Because if you saw the Packers head coach going into the locker room at halftime of that game, and that was a backbreaker,
Yeah.
Should have never happened. And somebody's got to pay the price, Lee. And if you don't cut the cornerback, you cut the coach. You don't forget something like that. It should have never happened. From a Buck perspective, it was a blessed event. But if that would have happened against the Bucks, Buck fans would be up in arms. You'd never hear the end of it. It's inexcusable, Steve. Inexcusable.
And to close the book on DeSean Jackson, I will say this. He is with the Rams now, and if he somehow can get healthy and have a decent season, maybe one more, he's going to be talked about in that Hall of Fame room most likely one day. Irie's going to pass the 11,000-yard mark if he can stick around another season or two. He had some incredible years, probably the best deep threat of his era. Frankly, probably the second best punt kick returner behind Devin Hester for his era, too, when he was doing that. So it'll be interesting one day if it ever gets to that.
And, of course, the Bucs are playing the Rams this year, right, out in L.A. Yeah.
Ira, I got another receiving question for you. This is about a receiver. The Bucs know him all too well. And it's Julio Jones. No, I'm not even suggesting the Bucs are going to trade for him. That's crazy. However, I saw a graphic today on NFL Network. And this seems rather low to me. The category was most receiving yards per game in NFL history.
That's right.
And the leader in NFL history, receiving yards per game, was Julio Jones at 95.5 yards.
In his career.
And for some reason, that seems low. Now, having invoked Julio Jones and his NFL leading yards receiving per game, how much lower would that figure be if the games facing the Smiths was not factoring in?
And of course, that's Lovey Smith, Mike Smith, and Ryan Smith when it comes to the trio of Smiths and Julio Jones.
Lee, I understand your point. You made me laugh. You know, he's been great, Lee. You know, the funny thing about Julio Jones, and by the way, they're not going to get a first-round pick, so forget about that. That's not going to happen. I think they'd be happy to get the second-round pick, given his age. But you're right, he torments the Bucs, and Lee, we still talk about that game with Ryan Smith. We still talk about it. Buck fans will never forget it. They will never forget it. Why is Ryan Smith covering this guy? Can't you make an adjustment? They never did. He ended up with, 15 catches? Something like that.
It was ridiculous amount.
It was just ridiculous. Look, tremendous route runner. Extremely physical. But, Steve, you know what's funny about Julio Jones? He doesn't really score a lot of touchdowns. He's had some of these years where he gets like 5 touchdowns. And that's very surprising because you think with his strength in the red zone, you throw it up to him and his size, he could be very effective. He's not great at scoring touchdowns, but anything else you could ask from a wide receiver, he's there. And he's going to Canton, Lee. He's going to Canton. I don't think you got a problem with that. Could be a first ballot guy. And I still think he's got a little bit left. I think he can help a team. A lot of teams are being rumored. Do not count out, and I'm not basing this on inside information, do not count out Kansas City. Because I think they could use another wide out opposite Hill You know, Watkins was no factor to me. To me, he was one of the most overpriced players in the league. But, you know, if you can get him for a second-round pick and you can fit him in your salary structure, you got Hill Jones, and, you know, you give him a shot at a Super Bowl, you'll have a very motivated Julio Jones.
Nicole Hardman, isn't he okay?
Just a guy. He's fast. He's fast. But, you know, I would call him a poor man Scotty Miller at this point.
Wow.
Ira, going to combine a couple of things here. Joe Tryon, maybe next week he'll be ready for minicamp. Maybe after this knee injury, just not ready yet, knee surgery. And so if he's not ready, and it sort of looks, seems a little odd that if he just had a cleanup or something minor, allegedly, that he would have been ready in a month after the surgery. But I'm not a doctor. I'm not like some of the other reporters around town. So Tryon is not ready yet. And Anthony Nelson was dragged out to talk to the media this week. And Nelson talked about how he's a pass rusher through and through and how he's there, even though he got 30% of the snaps last year, even though he's a third-year player, even though he obviously has a spot on the roster. He was there because he's got a couple of things to work on. And so he's one of the few named defensive players out there. And he said that he's ready for competition. He likes Joe Tryon personally, thinks he's a great guy. But when Tryon was drafted, you know, bring on the competition. He said if anybody's not up for it, then they don't belong in the NFL. And this guy's motivated, and Tryon hasn't practiced yet. It's going to be interesting, Ira. What do you think?
I think this is an interesting subject, and it brings me to something that Lee talks about a lot, and I think accurately. Look, nobody's wishing any ill will towards anybody, you know, about Shaq Barrett or JPP, but Lee makes the point consistently, and I think very well done, that should an injury occur, significant injury to one of those edge rushers, I think the Bucs would be in trouble. I think I'm going to write about it in the next few days. But, Lee, there's a big drop-off. I mean, you know, some teams have a third edge rusher, you know, that can spell a guy and play 20, 25 snaps and finish the season with 5 or 6 sacks. You know who that sounds like, Lee? Carl Nassib. That's who it sounds like.
He's not very popular in Vegas, though.
I know. He did not do a good job for the Raiders, but I keep going back to this Joe Tryon guy. I'm not saying that he's not going to be a good pro, but I think it's a stretch to think he's going to make a big impact in 2021. I don't think you can count on that. I just don't. He hasn't played football. You mentioned that. I think he's raw. I think he's a talent, but a talent that has to be developed. And so it might take 2 years, and if it does, so be it. So be it. Bucks have 2 strong edge rushers, but that third guy, Lee, and I'm including Nelson, they're kind of unproven, Lee. That could be a problem going forward.
The Bucks had 2 rookies last year that seemed to have played their best ball when the playoffs came around. What I'm referring to, or who I'm referring to, is Antoine Winfield and Tyler Johnson. And I'm starting to think a big part of that is, you know, they're rookies. Yeah, you really can't expect rookies to hit the ground running and ball out right away, unless your name's Tristan Wirfs, of course. But even he, I bet, would admit that he got better as the season went along. I'm hoping that's the case with Tryon. And look, I'm not saying he's going to be horrible, nothing like that. I think he'll be a fine player. My biggest concern is you can't tell me he doesn't have rust. He hasn't played since November 2019. There's got to be a little rust there. Has to be some. So it's kind of disappointing he's not ready to go yet. But I'm looking at for him. The goal is, in my eyes, that he starts playing his best ball into December and January.
He's got his work cut out. You know, we're talking about a backup defensive end for a team that, you know, we used to be talking about, hey, who's going to be the quarterback and who's going to be the running back and the wide receiver. So you got to put it in perspective. Steve.
Yeah, and but, you know, speaking of the perspective with the rust, Ira, it's kind of like you haven't been salsa dancing since 2007. Yeah, you know, you're a little rusty, you know?
Look, didn't Jason Light actually say it himself in terms of going into the draft thinking more developmentally rather than guys that have to contribute? I mean, you know, Jason Light was telling you the truth. Every starter's back. They're loaded. You know, they don't have to rely on rookies. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and they think he'll be just fine. You know, he'll come in, he'll get through camp. They like him. Nothing's changed. It's just, hey, here we are. It's June. The guy might not play in minicamp, which means he's going to debut at full throttle. You know, it's quite a welcome to the NFL situation, and there should be some competition there. I want to add this, Ira. I don't remember if it was in part one of our interview with Coach Rapone, and part two is coming up. But it was my shining moment from the interview, Ira. We were talking about blitzing and the pass rush. And I said, hey, Coach, when you got here, you said that the nickel position is the lead blitzer in this Todd Bowles defense. And that kind of disappeared. I said, is that because of Devin White and his proficiency and also with the success of the edge rushers? And he said, yeah, absolutely. Changed the whole defense. So you know what? Maybe if they don't, you know, if somebody gets hurt off the edge or they're not as successful off the edge, maybe they just sort of shift back to moving around Antoine Winfield and letting him play and some nickel blitzing and some other guys. And we get some more blitzing, which is what the Bulls defense is supposed to do. So I don't know if all hope is lost, but of course we want these guys to succeed.
That's a fair point, Steve. Should one of those two edge guys go down, I think, you know, and Bowles is creative enough to do it, Steve. And I think Winfield can be effective. I mean, we know about Devin White. Until they called the dogs off Lee late in the season, he was well on his way to double-digit sacks. That just doesn't happen, Lee, from an inside linebacker. It's very, very rare.
There's another guy that in the playoffs was lights out. Just
yes.
Lights out. Now, I got a question for you. Unfortunately, I hacked off quite a few readers. It's not my intention. I never want to hack off a reader. But I have a talent for doing that, I guess, because I have strong opinions.
That's
and,
right.
And really, it's not a goal of mine whatsoever. That's the last thing you want to do. Well, I got people worked up. You know, I don't know if you saw Brady's TikTok video today, but man, it got me pumped up. He was kind of highlighting a couple plays this year, his favorite play of the year, and his least favorite play of the year. The least favorite was the, you know, four downs, throwing his four fingers up in the air. And he said it was very confusing. He's never been so confused. But his favorite play was, we were talking about it a little bit earlier, Scotty Miller, the bomb against the Packers in the first half in the NFC Championship game. And Brady starts hollering on the video, let's go for it! No risk it, no biscuit! And it's like, I got me fired up seeing a 44-year-old man getting that fired up talking about throwing long. And I got to thinking, the Bucs are so freaking loaded in the deep pass. You know, the Bucs may have the best passing offense on paper, maybe in NFL history, certainly since 99 Rams, in my eyes. They can be that dominant. And I got to thinking, you know, you and I were talking, Ira, you're in love with Giovanni Bernard. I'm like, hey, okay, nice little player. But, you know, to me, they shouldn't even be farting around with short passes to the running back, a backup running back at that. And I got to thinking, I'm going to ask Arians this, but I want your feedback, Kyra. Are the Bucs loaded enough in the passing game that they don't have to monkey around with, oh, we'll take what the defense gives us? They may be loaded enough where they say, no, we'll take what we want.
See, Lee, you love Al Davis. You bring him into every podcast. And I love that, Lee. I love that you do that because, you know, longtime Chiefs fan, always going up against the Raiders in the AFL. And even you got to respect Al Davis. I mean, we will take what we want. That's a classic Davis thing. The quarterback's got to go down hardly in the first five plays of the game. And who can argue with, you know, the success of the Raiders when Al was sharp and at the top of his game. I understand your point, Lee. They have a tremendous amount of weapons. Lee, this thing about Bernard, he sticks in your craw a little bit. Lee, I think your premise is wrong because you think that I'm implying that the presence of Giovanni Bernard is going to change the Buck offensive philosophy. Lee, I'm only talking about three or four catches a game. That's all I'm talking about for Bernard. Yeah, Lee, third and five, third and six, and it's an extended running play. You know, the guy's going to catch 75% of those balls that Brady throws him, and he's going to make first downs, and that'll allow him to start fresh and throw downfield to Evans and Godwin. So Lee, I'm not trying to change, Leftwich's playbook, but as Steve says, you add another piece to the puzzle. There's nothing wrong with it.
Okay. I'm glad, honest to goodness, I was not even thinking Al Davis when I asked that question, but it makes me feel better.
On the Bernard thing, Lee, Ira, I'm going to lean toward you just simply because no matter what, you're going to throw three check downs or flare outs a game anyway. No matter what.
Yeah.
So you might as well throw it to a guy who's freaking good at catching the ball and a superior pass catcher. So it's an upgrade because you can't avoid throwing the short passes no matter what. I just like the upgrade.
Is that the first time in 9 podcasts that Isbitz said I made a solid point, Lee? First time?
Third time, I think.
Yeah, third time, I think. Yeah, well, okay. I mean, you got to throw the pass anyway, so let's upgrade and get excited about the upgrade, because that's what we do. And we also get excited about applauding Lee. We have to give him his due, Ira. In our last discussion about the Bucks training at the Yankees facility, meaning the Tom Brady-led workouts with whoever he told has to be there, and they showed up there. They had a workout there. All right. And they then worked out at One Buck to listen to Bruce Arians, who was pleading with Brady to bring his group to One Buck. Please work out here, Tom. It's safer. We'll leave you alone. We'll do whatever you want. The Glazers will leave some bagels and lox in the indoor facility, whatever you want to snack on. And so Brady came back with the guys, and then, like we said on the podcast, and I know other media types out there were saying, oh, Tom's back now, he's listening to the coach. We said, well, even if he comes back, doesn't mean he's not going to do whatever the hell he wants to do the next time. And so Brady was back to the Yankees facility. It got under Arian's skin a little bit. But Lee was very clear in the first week that maybe the reason that Brady was over at the Yankees facility was because he was doing something that wasn't going to be approved at One Buck with his film crew or who knows what. You didn't think that was the case, Ira, but you thought maybe it's possible. I thought the Glazers would have just approved everything that Brady would have asked. But lo and behold, out comes a TV commercial, a YouTube commercial for Under Armour, and it appears to be Brady throwing the ball around to Gronk at the Yankees facility. So maybe that was part of it. You know, who knows how much shooting they did to get that actual 1 minute video. Could have been 30 minutes of film till they got what they wanted. But we got to give it up to Lee. And it appears that that's what was going on.
Twice a day, I get lucky, you know.
Absolutely right, Steve. When Lee said it at the time, I was kind of startled because I wasn't thinking about it in terms of a business proposition. But Lee's got a way of figuring out, hey, follow the money. You know, you didn't say that, but it's never a bad idea, Lee. Follow the money. Never. We don't know for sure, Lee, that you were right, but there are some indications that you might be right on, and that was a heck of a call, DeKemper.
You know, the video that Brady put out on Instagram, that was an Under Armour commercial, basically. And we all know that, now, there's listeners out there, what's that matter with the Bucks? Well, the NFL is a Nike shop, and Nike has a huge contract with the NFL, and obviously Nike would get pretty bent if the NFL was opening up its facilities for one of their main competitors. And who knows how many hundreds of millions of dollars Nike drops on the NFL. And just out of curiosity, and I didn't think about it until, you know, Steve was speaking just a moment ago, I did a Google search, and I put New York Yankees Under Armour, first link. Official Under Armour New York Yankees gear, MLBShop.com. Apparently, baseball is an Under Armour shop, and they were cool with hosting a commercial shoot on their premises.
Steve, I saw a headline on the website. I didn't get the details, so why don't you tell me right now? Did Wirfs make the top 100 list?
Ira, Sage, listen. This Under Armour thing with, as Lee was trying to explain, it's the equivalent of you having the audacity to drink a Bud Light when you could be having Big Storm beer. I mean, why would anybody do such a thing? It's like the frauds at One Buck Place, right? You always see Jason Light and all the fellas and the coach drinking Bud Light. And then that picture emerged of Jason Light and his whole team at the press box, and nobody had a Bud Light in front of them. So, you know, we don't do that around here. We love Big Storm beer through and through at all times. And we would never think of drinking anything else. The Bromosa, the Tangerine IPA, Bay Beer, which is
Kolsch. Kolsch.
Ira loves that Kolsch. Loves that Kolsch. You know, you can get it in the stores. Fresh Market has a great display. Tropic Pressure, Golden Ale. And, of course, the tap rooms are open. And all you have to do is go to BigStormBrewery.com. BigStormBrewery.com, punch in your zip code, and you can find out where you are in Florida or five other states or so where you can find Big Storm beer. Very exciting. Lee posted a picture of some Sunny Key Lime, another great beer from Big Storm in his pool, I think. So Lee's been having some fun over the weekend. Big Storm beer, the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. Ira, before we talk about Tristan Wirfs and Prickly Pete picking numbers out of a hat, we don't even need to talk about that, frankly, but you talked about follow the money. Well, we're going to call this next segment here follow the anger. Okay, follow the anger. And I'm not talking about the mainstream Bucks media here. I'm talking about Bruce Arians, a little pissed off about these guys not showing up. Now, meanwhile, he told everybody not to show up. And then he said he wanted them to show up. And then he doesn't want them to practice on their he doesn't want them to practice on their own. He wants them to practice on the field, and he's back and forth, and guys are there, and Tyler Johnson isn't there, and he's a little annoyed, and Keyshawn Vaughn and Tom Brady is telling guys to work with him, and why Tom Brady can't schedule his workouts when Bruce Arians is not working out, I don't know. It's a little sloppier than I think everybody would have thought, and Arians admitted that Tyler Johnson is not, quote, a dumbass, you know, and Bruce Arians might listen to his quarterback, too, if he were Tyler Johnson. What do you make of this?
Steve, you put it very, very well. It's not a consistent message from the top dog. If I'm Tyler Johnson, I'm sticking with Brady, too, because, Lee, is it far-fetched that in the catacombs of One Buck Place, when they start talking about, hey, Tom, what do you think of these receivers? How would you rank them on the roster or whatever? Brady's going to have a lot of clout. Is that far-fetched, Lee? And if Brady's enamored with Tyler Johnson and tells Leftwich and Arians, you know, I think we should get this kid the ball more. He's really developed, and I think he can really help us. Let's give him some more opportunities. Lee, that's not going to fall on deaf ears. That thing's done by that night. It's written into the playbook. So I think Arians needs to be a little more consistent, Lee, because originally, you know, he kind of downplayed showing up for the voluntary sessions, not the mandatory next week, but the voluntary ones. And then he, you know, takes a little, you know, a little pinprick swipe at a couple of guys, a couple of young players. So they got to be a little confused at this point, Lee. I think the Bucks got to clean their act up a little there.
That's fair. I understand what he's saying about Tyler Johnson and Keyshawn Vaughn. There's no question Keyshawn Vaughn needs to work. No doubt about it. Tyler Johnson was inconsistent last year. And let's be honest, rookies are generally inconsistent. So Tyler Johnson didn't show me something that, you know, they got to get rid of the guy. He showed me that they may have something, especially when you factor in how Arians gushed over him when they scouted him at the Outback Bowl and subsequently drafted him, and in light saying how Arians hounded him for months to draft him, and he finally did draft him. But I understand that, you know, I don't think Tyler Johnson has shown so much that he's above working out at the OTAs. I think he could have used those snaps. And I agree with Arians also that, hey, if Brady tells you you're working with me, don't be a dumbass. Work with him.
Hey, guys, let me pull an Ira Kaufman here. And I'll say, tell me where I'm wrong, okay? Tell me where I'm wrong. What am I missing here? Look, once upon a time, not too long ago, there was something called a double session and a triple session where guys worked out twice a day, three times a day, three practices a day. Why the hell can't Tyler Johnson work out with Brady and then come over to One Buck and work out with the OTAs? And same thing with Keyshawn Vaughn. And if they're being scheduled at the same time, why the hell is that happening? I mean, why can't Arians and Brady communicate and say, you know, you guys are going from 11:15 to 1. How about, you know, Brady likes to work out in the morning. 7:30 to 9:30. Why can't Tyler Johnson go to both? They're right down the block. So something's messed up, and I'm thinking that maybe Arians is annoyed that those guys aren't going to both sessions. When Arians came into the league, you practiced all day long and didn't get a drink of water.
See, that's why you're running this podcast, Isbits. That's why. Because you delve into the story behind the story. Lee, I'll take it this far. I don't think Arians is happy with Brady doing the private sessions away from the facility. I just don't think he's happy about it. Now, is he going to tell him not to do it? I don't know how far he's willing to take it, but I don't think it's helping. And I think it's causing a little bit of a problem. And to Steve's point, Lee, if they could coordinate the times, there's no reason Johnson can't and Vaughn can't attend both if they want. There's no reason.
There shouldn't be. And we don't know what kind of pull Brady's using. Because remember, Brady made that plea in a Zoom conference, teleconference to the NFLPA. Don't let the owners bury you. Pitchers don't need to throw 95-mile-an-hour fastballs in December. We shouldn't be asked to do this in the springtime. And, hey, if you're Tyler Johnson and you just won a Super Bowl and you're playing with the greatest of all time and he tells you, don't go to OTAs, I would have to think that's a little bit intimidating.
Sage, I want to thank our listeners because, you know, I dropped two podcasts, one on Saturday, one on Monday. Not typical. And, of course, holiday weekend. Excellent audience. No change in our fantastic audience. People love your podcast. Maybe we hit some new people on a holiday weekend. So thank you to everybody who subscribes at Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Podcast Addict, wherever. We appreciate the love and the support. And of course, it's all brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. That's where you shop. Bill Curry Ford, C-U-R-R-I-E. .com or at the showroom a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. And Big Storm Beer is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. And we never forget, 24/7, we remember they're there for us, Florida's Elite Restoration. Now, Ira, I said this was about, although you said curb appeal is the theme of the podcast, I'm sticking with the follow the anger and we'll call it part two. You've got some big bug up your ass, Ira, about locker room access and athletes and the changing landscape of the NFL, you know, what this means for fans and media and just you've got a sage take on it. It's strong. So why don't you just let it all hang out and Lee and I'll throw some darts at you.
All right. And it's not just for the reporter's sake. I would argue when I was a fan growing up in Brooklyn, you know, and I'd run out the next morning with a dime and pick up my Daily News or New York Post, I want to read what the guy said after the game. I want to read it, especially after a loss. Zoom calls don't do the job for me. Interviews on the club's official website don't interest me either. And I'm going to write a column about this, and I'm going to have various examples of great quotes that I personally have been linked to coming out of locker rooms after games, wins, losses, whatever, shedding some light, some color, some context into what the heck just happened. And somehow it got all wrapped up into this Naomi Osaka, and I don't even know if you know who she is, Lee. But
last week, no, I had no idea. We talked about this. I had to Google her. I had no clue who she was.
She's a terrific young tennis player. She's got 4 Grand Slam titles already. And she's like 22 years old, but she made a lot of headlines at the French Open. She said she wasn't going to do post-match interviews. Tennis players are obligated, and they get fined if they don't do it. And she didn't do it after her first round victory. They fined her $15,000 and threatened that if that keeps up, she could be expelled from the tournament. Next thing you know, she pulled out and did an explanation and said she suffers from depression or whatever. And look, I'm not doubting her, and I hope she gets the help she needs, Lee, but that's no reason to all of a sudden go from that particular point with that particular athlete and say, I don't think football players should have to talk after games. Lee, they're making enough money. I don't think it's that much of an imposition. Talk to us, and the fans will benefit from it. I just think the league needs to be strong in this regard.
We live in different times, Zyler. You were talking about how you take your dime and you ran to the newspaper box to get your post or your daily news. That's like our parents talking about their parents and the horse and buggy. And I'm just being very honest. I'm speaking openly here. I really wonder, people who read football information, how much they want to read quotes. We live in a stats era. And it's almost to the point where if you can't slap a damn number on something, people don't want anything to do with it. I personally, obviously, want all the access I can get because you develop relationships. You develop sources. You develop lines of information, unfiltered often. Certainly, I want to get back to the post-game locker room. And the players, they don't want anything to do with the media. One of the reasons why we haven't had access to the players in the past year is the players with the NFL, and it's like, you want us to play football? Okay, then no media. And so the NFL capitulated. But Pete Rozelle, the former, the great commissioner in the NFL, had this figured out in 1960. The more access, the more popular the sport. Talk to any marketing person, they'll tell you the same thing. One of the reasons why NFL owners like sites like Joe Buck's Fan, like sites like Pro Football Talk, and there's other sites as well, is because they keep the machine flowing every day. Every day there's something different. They keep chatter going. And when people get, there's a word that starts with E, engaged. When fans are engaged, they're more likely to go to games. They're more likely to buy gear. They're more likely to buy season tickets. They're more likely to pay for parking, on and on and on and on. More likely to buy NFL Network. It's endless streams of revenue for engaged fans. And it's hard to engage fans every day of the year when you can't speak with players. So I see both sides of it. I know we live in a completely different era where you, Ira, when you were a young guy, you know, personally, I would wait for the newspaper to be delivered in the morning. You went to your corner, drugstore, or whatever, the newspaper box, bought your newspapers. Now, people in their 20s and 30s and 40s even, they get up, they flip on Twitter. They want to see a quick video clip, and that's about it. Or they go to their stats site to check on their fantasy football or fantasy baseball or fantasy basketball. It's not so much, well, I want to see what the left guard had to say about a first and 18 play. To be fair, I don't know how important quotes are anymore, but for us selfishly and for the NFL in particular, it is important. For an everyday Joe Blow, I'm not sure how important quotes are.
Well, Steve, a juicy quote tells a story.
Absolutely.
A nice post-game anecdote in the locker room goes a long way, Steve, to engaging fans, I think.
It was 2017. Steve went out to Arizona. The Bucks played at Arizona. In 2016, they just barely missed a wild card. And 2017, first road game at Arizona. Am I right, Steve? And DeMar Thompson told you in the locker room after the game that the team thought they had the game won when they showed up. And they got clobbered by Arians and the Cardinals.
Yeah, he said that. And then I went to Joe Hawley in the locker room. I said, hey, you know, DeMar just told me this. Do you agree? And he's like, yeah.
And that kind of stuff we would never get on a Zoom. Never, ever get on a Zoom.
Right. And there's so many examples. But I think here's the deal, Ira. There's no way to argue that fans, or at least a percentage of them, they can't get enough and they want to know everything that's going on with the team. And the only way to get the truth is to have more access to players so you understand what they're thinking and catch them after a game. And that's the way to get to the truth. You know, it's like the UFOs, man. We want answers. We demand answers. And these
photos that are not grainy and out of focus, please.
Yeah. And without the access, these answers will never come out ever. And the fans like that stuff, and it's part of the history of the league, and it just goes to the hardcore fans and their desire to know everything. I don't know. I don't know if there's an answer, but I do know the answer is the reporters themselves, the beat writers in general. I'm not talking about you, Ira. I'm just saying in general, the beat writers need to say, okay, let's pivot. Let's call all the agents. Let me get, if I call 53 agents, I'll get 16 of them who will give me the phone numbers of their clients so I can call them after games. And let's find a way to do this in a different kind of way. You know, these players will pick up the phone if, and they all have them at their locker rooms after games. That's what the first thing they're going to is their locker room. Who is their phone? Who texted me? What do I got? Blah, blah, blah. So I think reporting has to change. There's nothing like the in-person like that. But in many ways, if you're a good reporter, you're going to be able to say, hey, you know, Jordan Whitehead, can I FaceTime with you right after the game and get some stuff? And you know, so it may change to that if the league doesn't want to break down and open it up like they used to before, Ira. So I think ultimately the access is going to be there. It's just not going to be league-sponsored access unless they go back to normal. And I will say, Ira, when you paid 10 cents for that newspaper, it was actually an 8-cent paper. You were just buying it from the guy up the street who was scalping it. He was scalping the newspaper for 10 cents.
You know, Steve, you got a great idea, and I didn't think about this. I was going to tell Ira, I'm a big believer in this, and Steve, this is a perfect example. And I know a lot of members of the Penn and Mike Club don't believe in this, but I'm a big believer in this. Maybe it's because of my old man's military background, I don't know. But adapt, adjust, overcome. You know, when the Army Rangers were floating across the English Channel, when he saw there was no media work for him up on the cliffs of Point du Hoc, did they turn around and go back to the ships? Hell no. They adapted, they adjusted, they overcame. Find a way. And that's, that's a perfect example. Find a way. You know, find a couple of agents that will cooperate with you, and it will have something set up with their client that will text you after a game or FaceTime with you after a game. Maybe 50% of the time they won't want to, but 50% is better than zero.
I'm digging in my heels, gentlemen. You remember that scene in Dog Day Afternoon when Pacino screamed, Attica, Attica. Well, I'm screaming, access.
Is that where that came from?
It's the day of Isbitz's wedding, Dog Day Afternoon.
The last time I heard anybody talk about Dog Day Afternoon was Mike North when I was working in Chicago. And it was the first day of the NCAA tournament, and there was a boatload of upsets and crappy teams covering. And Mike North kept yelling, Dog Day Afternoon, Dog Day Afternoon.
Take it away, Stevie.
All right, Sage, you know, we're getting out of here. And, of course, thank you again to our presenting sponsors, Bill Curry Ford, and the magic of Big Storm Beer and Florida's Elite Restoration. But Ira, I'll leave on a quick Steve Dumig story, which this sort of speaks to here. WDAE, which Dumig was the drive time icon in the afternoon. DAE did not have the Bucks contract, so they were not allowed to broadcast the Bucks games or be the exclusive broadcaster on site for training camp. So what did they do? They set up shop next door. They put up a big crane in the sky over University of Tampa, and they had their guys, including Dumig, climb up that thing, sit in the bucket up there, and broadcast and talk about training camp. We're live here at Bucks training camp. And doing that, Ira, one year, Dumig told me and Lee the story, you know, this is not on the air, but he got struck by lightning up in that crane. That was a great example of, you know, screw you. You won't give it to us. We're going to get it our way. But I agree with you, Ira. Demand access. And this training camp, if they don't feed the media, we're ordering takeout. We're going to get the Domino's guy to fling the pizzas over the fence. Or we're going to order some fancier takeout and charge it to Team Glazer. And that's it.
Lee, during training camp, you'll find me on the roof of Panera Bread, and I'll be munching on a ham and cheese muffalata.